You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day guys, welcome to Red Time for another week. I'm Jared Barker, Jake Michaels is with me. Round 9 is just on our doorstep. The AFL hasn't nailed the fixture twice in a row, have they, Jake? Last week we had the rivalry round, this week we've got the top 8 all playing each other.
We had the rivalry round without the derby.
Oh, yeah.
Which our friends over in WA weren't too happy about. Do you think this round is that good?
Top 8 playing each other.
Yeah, that's
sixth
that's
time
good.
Since 94, I think.
I like that, but yep. That just means that we've got 5 games with no top 18 featured. So
I think you like complaining about things. And when I look at it, I reckon there are storylines everywhere we look. And look, speaking of storylines, there are some breaking news today off the top. Gold Coast player Will Powell has been suspended for 5 matches after he used an anti-gay slur in round 8. I'll read out some of the AFL's statement today, which reads, the AFL wishes to advise that Gold Coast Suns player Will Powell has been found guilty of conduct unbecoming in relation to an incident during the first quarter of Sunday night's match against the Brisbane Lions. Powell used a highly offensive anti-gay slur against a Brisbane opponent, which demeans and denigrates any person regardless of their sexuality. Powell has received a 5-match suspension. He will not be eligible to play for the Gold Coast Suns during round 9 through to 13, including playing in the VFL. Now, this is obviously really disappointing, especially with what happened with Jeremy Finlayson only a few weeks ago. It's still so recent. Jake, does this 5-week penalty fit the crime? And what was your reaction to all this when it broke today?
Well, my reaction was that it's embarrassing, it's pathetic, and it just highlights the problematic footy boy culture that exists still in the sport and in wider society as well. I hate it. And as you say, the Jeremy Finlayson, it was an example for the league. And to have this happen a couple of weeks later is just, it's just so wrong and it makes my blood boil. I love the penalty from the AFL though.
Yeah.
You know, we actually questioned why they took so long with Finlayson to come out with the penalty, which ended up being 3 weeks. To come out with 5 straight away, I think that sends a message. And I said it at the time when we were talking Finlayson 3 or 4 weeks ago, whenever it was, about this should be a warning for the league. Why should it be every player gets to make this mistake once? It shouldn't work like that. So you can't be, well, every 700 players get to make this stupid mistake once, and then the penalty goes up from there. No, that's not how it should work. And I'm glad they haven't gone down that road. They've given Finlayson 3 weeks, and they've said, basically telling us now, the next offender, it's 5. Yeah. And I hope the next time it happens, it's 7 or 8 or 10 or whatever it's going to be, because this cannot keep happening.
Which they said they would do after the Finlayson suspension. They said, if it does keep happening, we will rise the weeks. Yeah. And they've done that, which shows that there are, you know, they're moving in the right direction, I think, when it comes to this sort of stuff. Now, the Suns did confirm that Powell made the club aware of his comments during the game. Doesn't make it okay.
But we said at the time, with Finlayson that I'm glad he did that, because it was we hadn't seen anyone go through that before and then come out and say, well, yeah, I was at fault, put my hand up straight away. But I think you can't just see this happen all the time now and players getting away with it. So it doesn't carry the same weight Powell doing it as it did for when Finlayson did it.
No, that's right. Here are some comments from Gold Coast CEO Mark Evans as well. Will's comment was completely unacceptable and in no way reflects what we stand for as a football club. We have spoken to Will to ensure he understands the severity of his comment and the effect comments like these can have on others. He has committed to work hard to educate and better himself, and he will have the club's support to make those improvements. So I agree with everything you said. I think there are community standards that the AFL players need to live by and live up to when they are out there on the field. And as I said, I think the AFL giving him 5 weeks, which is an increase on the 3 weeks, does show that at least they're moving in the right direction when it comes to doing what they can to achieve equality. So for that, I think it's a tick, but really disappointing to see this is still happening.
It's highly disappointing. And I don't know, Will Power. I don't necessarily think that players or anybody that make these comments have an issue with or are homophobic. I don't think they necessarily are. But I think that is a problem in itself, that these kind of comments and that language is ingrained in players and in society, and that is a fundamental issue that needs changing. Yeah. And the fact that it's happened so soon after Finlayson, when so much was spoken about it and so much learning and what Finlayson went through, and other players saw that. If I'm a player and I see what someone else has gone through by saying something, in my head, it's like, you've got to be so aware. Yeah. And the fact that it comes out, it's something that's said without even thinking about it. And that is the biggest problem with it.
Also on the agenda today, Jake, there have been reports in recent days that the AFL are considering proposals for non-playing players of a premiership team to be awarded premiership rings as long as they played a game throughout the season. Are you for or against this idea?
Don't love it, got to say. Don't know what your feelings are on this, but yeah, I'm happy to leave things as they are. I feel like
scared of change, are you, Jack?
I'm not scared of change, but I don't like the need or the desire to constantly be changing things. And I feel like everyone, whenever there's a change at the top, there always has to be, people feel like, well, if I don't do anything, I'm seen as not doing anything and sitting on my hands. We don't always need to be changing things, especially things that have always been fine. Yeah. And I have no issue with it. It's not about the Americanization. I don't think we need to be copying all the time what is done in sports in the United States. But that's not really the issue I have with it. I'm bigger on, I don't want it to be something that every player at the club gets. That's something I don't love about US sport. I don't like that NBA team wins the championship and every player on the roster gets a ring. It's like, you're talking about players that did not contribute on the court, or in this case in footy on the field, to winning. And so why should they get the ring?
Yeah. And I agree with you that I am against it as well. I think if you ask the players what they would want, I'd be surprised if they would feel like a premiership player, or I think they'd be almost embarrassed to have that next to their name. Not played on the day. Yeah. Now, I do want to bring this up from memory, if I've got this right. Leon Davis actually got a medal from 2010. He played in the drawn grand final against St Kilda. He didn't play in the replay, but he was awarded a premiership medallion. Now, I believe he doesn't have that and he didn't want it and has actually passed that on to a family member. Now, he played in the drawn grand final and didn't want it. So what's a player who played one game in round four
or played zero
and
games,
played the rest of the season in the VFL, what's he going to feel like by? Do you think he's going to really feel like he actually contributed by just because he's got this symbolic premiership ring? I don't think so. I think it is weird in a way when it's a club initiative, because clubs do this already, to be honest. That's okay. If it's on their own accord, you want to acknowledge 100%. The whole list, that's completely fine. But if it's an official thing to be recognised by the AFL, that's when I think it's wrong. And you hear coaches, every premiership coach every year, they explain it's not just the 22 or the 23 that run out on the day. It takes a whole list to win a premiership, and they're right.
And, it does,
and I'll acknowledge it actually does. So if a club wants to honour their entire list, then do what you want to do that as your own club initiative. But I don't think it should be an official thing to come in by the AFL. Now, reportedly, these rings could be worth up to $50,000. So you times
I'm sure
that,
the players will want them.
You times that by the 44, which is the amount of players that are on the list, you're upwards of $2 million per year for premiership rings. It's a lot of money, and that could be spent in a lot of different ways to improve the game at any level. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Because what will end up happening is we have players, it becomes almost luck of the draw, who just happens to be on a list at the right time.
Yep.
You can have players that play 15 games in their career and have won four or have been involved in four premierships. And I think it really distorts the way we view premiership players, premiership teams. And for that reason, it's probably why I don't like it. You're always going to have champion player, you know, gets suspended, gets injured, misses out on a grand final and doesn't feel part of it. That's going to happen. But I'd rather it be one or two players missing out than 20, 25 players getting it that probably don't deserve to get it.
The clubs get the flag and the cup and the players on the day get the medal. I think that's the way it should be.
I just don't think that needs to change.
These rings would be more expensive than a medal, but I don't think they'd be as valuable is the way that I'll put it.
Apologies if anyone's listening after Thursday night, but we're going to look at the Thursday night game now. Will you be worried about Carlton if they lose to the Demons, and it would obviously be their third loss in a row?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be. As I said on the Tuesday podcast, they've lost to a couple of pretty good teams in the last 2 weeks in Geelong and Collingwood. They haven't actually been beaten heavily. They've been in both of those games and had their opportunities.
Could have easily won both.
Had their opportunities to win.
And I've taken my Carlton hat off. Could have easily won both.
Correct. So what these losses have done is expose their weaknesses. But you'd rather lose to these teams now than in September. So it's almost not a bad thing that they now know what they need to work on. So the Blues, I think, are still doing a fair bit right. They're number one for contested possessions, number two in the comp for contested marks, seventh for inside 50s, five for clearances, third for shots at goal, and third for tackles. They're the number one tackle inside 50 team in the comp as well. Every team's got their injuries, but clearly they're going to be better suited by having better personnel in their team. It starts tonight with McGovern and Jack Martin coming in as well. Winner Adam Sard's injured and a few others. I just think as long as Curnow and Mackay are fit, they're always going to be a chance in most games. That's how dominant those two are, and that's how hard they are to stop. So they could easily lose tonight. I've tipped the Blues because I think they're a better team generally, but they could lose tonight. My views won't change. They're still my premiership tip.
Yeah, look, the caveat is always it depends how the game unfolds. But let's just say it's similar-ish to how the previous two have gone against the Cats and Pies.
The D's are a different team, though.
I know they're a different team, but this is my point, is that if they lose it in a similar way and they look slow, they're beaten on the outside, and the transition game, it's the transition where they were killed by both sides in the last 2 weeks, then yes, and that will be a concern because it's just more data that shows a worrying trend. And I don't think you can ignore that. And I'm someone that has been very bullish on Carlton this year. There's a lot of things to like, but this is an area of major concern, and I don't know how it can be ignored. The other thing is, and it's sort of gone a little under the radar, but it feeds into the poor transition game defensively, is how many points they're conceding. Mm. 89 points a game. Now, that's only North, Hawthorn, Richmond and West Coast have conceded more than that this year.
Yeah.
Now, that's where Carlton is. And we're talking about Carlton as a top-tier team, a legitimate premiership chance. You cannot be conceding that many points a game. Look at Port Adelaide last year. All year it was like, they concede too much, they concede too much, they concede too much. They cannot win it. They were 85 a game last year. Mm. So Carlton's even more this year. I think those two areas will be a concern. Now, Melbourne don't score heavily, but if Melbourne does score upwards of 80 points tonight, 85 points, and there's that issue on the outside with and a lack of speed, I think there has to be concern. Not to mention the fact they will have lost to Geelong, Collingwood and Melbourne. I know you say it's better to lose in May or April than in September, but you can't take a huge amount of confidence knowing that they're the sides that you will be playing in September.
No, well said. Moving on. Now, this season we have spoken about the best players in the competition. We've spoken about the most improved players in the competition. But today we're again looking at another different category, those players who maybe don't get the plaudits that they deserve, Jake. So which player is having the most underrated season? And I haven't seen your answer, so I'm looking forward to hearing who you have to say.
Yeah, and shout out to Christian for blowing your player in terms of showing me who it was. So yes. You reached out to him and he's replied all and put me on the email. So I found out who yours is.
We may have inquired to Champion Data just to see what stats there are about my player. You know who it is, but who's yours?
I've gone with Tristan Cherry, and I think it's by a landslide.
Not a bad call.
To be completely
honest.
Not
a bad call.
He is a player. Do you know what number he wears?
I don't know what number anyone wears. Yeah, I'm bad with that sort of stuff.
Some people aren't good with numbers. I don't reckon many people would recognise him if he walked down the street. Now, he's obviously pretty tall, so that might give away that he's an athlete.
Is he wearing a helmet down the street?
Maybe he is. But he has been phenomenal this year, and I don't think people realise how good he has been. Playing for North Melbourne certainly doesn't help. And just, he hasn't played 50 games yet, but he's producing all Australian fringe ruck numbers. And that's not over the top to suggest. So here's just a couple of numbers on him for this year in terms of where he ranks as a ruckman. Rating points, he's third. Disposals, eighth. Tackles, first. Hitouts, fourth. Clearances, second. And contested possessions, third. Now, those are incredible numbers for
impressive,
where he's at.
Yep.
For someone who, as I said, hasn't even hit 50 games yet in his career. I think he's been phenomenal. I think he is showing that he can be a top-tier ruck in the future, if not already. And to be honest, I mentioned this the other day, just sort of off the cuff. What would change if he swapped positions right to this weekend, tonight, with Max Gawn? If Max Gawn said, all right, I'm going to play for North Melbourne this week, you go and play for Melbourne, Do we notice any change? And I don't mean that. It's not a knock on Max Gawn. His numbers
this year...
You're
always quick to just show his numbers why Ruckman don't have big influence.
His numbers this year are not that dissimilar. Mm. Gawn gets the tick with his contested marking. I'll give him that. He wins a little bit more ball. But then there's other things that... Cherry's doing better than him anyway. So yeah, I think
the D's would still be well served.
They're not going to be. He's not going to walk in and they're going to start struggling. That's my point. So yeah. I think he's been absolutely fantastic. And one other little nugget I'll leave you with that Christian did share with me was that he's led North Melbourne this year in contested possessions in 5 of their 8 games. Mm. The record by a ruckman in a season is Brody Grundy and Luke Darcy have both done it 9 times, 2021 and 2022. 2002 respectively. So he's on track to smash that.
Yeah.
And I don't think he gets anywhere enough credit that he should. He's been phenomenal this year.
I don't mind that. My player, as you already know as of this morning, thank you to Christian Jolly, is Josh Kelly. Now, you might not think that he is an underrated player in general, but when you think of the Giants and who their best players are, especially this season, I think your mind might go straight to Tom Green. I think he's the one who's
getting all the
stolen
credit.
The limelight in 2024. But I just want to highlight Josh Kelly is averaging career highs this year in marks, goals, score involvements, and inside 50s. He's plus 21.8 on expected output. That's using the 100x. System, which we've been through before. It means he's playing well above what's expected of him as a midfielder. That's a huge number. It actually ranks him 7th in the entire competition. The 7th best player in the entire competition this year using 100x, and he's actually the number one midfielder in the competition as well. So, yeah, I'm on Josh Kelly. His disposals overall are actually down, but I think he's having
volume.
In terms of the actual disposal numbers per game, but he's having a pretty strong influence and a better impact on offensively as well. So, yeah, I don't know why he's not getting the same recognition. Maybe it's not because he's racking up 30 a week, but what he is doing with the footy this year is a lot better in an attacking sense than he's ever produced for his entire career, really.
Yeah, that's interesting. You can make the case. That's career best form, and he is a player. He's not like he's someone that's never got credit before. A few years ago, people were talking about him as one of the best midfielders in the game.
Correct.
Moving on, which team in round 9 is most likely to cause an upset?
Well, I've tipped the Blues, and they're technically the outsiders with the bookies, so I think they'll get over the D's tonight, but I'm going to go
Have you tipped Carlton against Geelong and Collingwood?
Yeah, I have. Maybe it doesn't bode well for my team tonight, but I think Fremantle. I'm going to Friday night. I think the Dockers are a big chance at home, in form, albeit they only beat a heavily banged up Richmond side last week. They are in form, and the Swans are without Tom McCartan. So I just think there's a really big opportunity for their forward line, Josh Tracy, Jai Amos, and Luke Jackson, to really stretch that Sydney defence. Now, the Dockers are the number 2 defensive team in the competition behind only the Demons. Why that's important is because the Swans are the number 1 attacking team when it comes to points for. Where I think the focus needs to be for Fremantle and what they need to stop with Sydney is their goal-kicking midfielders. So your Gouldens, your Chad Warners and your Isaac Heaneys, obviously. They're tough to stop. But Freo are the number 1 clearance differential team in the competition this year. So if there is one team that can maybe get on top of the Swans in that area, I reckon the Dockers can do it. And we know how strong their midfield has been performing as of late. I think Sarong, Hayden Young, Andrew Brayshaw, Nat Fyfe, Sean Darcy, they're all playing really good footy. They're capable of holding their own defensively, but I think going forward they can damage the scoreboard as well. So I think where a lot of Freo's strengths are, while Sydney are strong in those areas as well, I wouldn't be surprised if the Dockers do stand up under the pressure and hand the Swans their second defeat of the year. I haven't been brave enough to tip them, but I reckon they're actually a pretty good chance.
I think they're a great chance. I think it feels... I'm big on letdown spots, and I was at the SCG on last weekend, and I thought Sydney were great. They've been fantastic all year, aside from that Richmond game. As I said, that just feels so weird to talk about. But yeah, it does feel like a letdown spot. Beat the rival... Lot of travel. All of a sudden, it's not as urgent to win because you got that game against GWS last week. Yeah. I like that. I can certainly see them winning too. I've gone for Brisbane. At the start of the year, if you said Brisbane will play Adelaide and the Crows will be favoured, I forget where it is. I mean, I don't think anyone would have believed that. I know the year isn't panning out how
a few injuries at the moment as well.
I know they're depleted, but and the year has certainly not planned out as they would have expected. But I yeah, I just can't believe that they're not favoured in this game. And Adelaide has been playing well too, so I'll give them credit there. But their season feels like it is on the line. It's not the first time I've said that this year, and it's probably going to be the case for the next couple of weeks until they can sort of get that record up to almost a 500 level. So the urgency is there, unlike Sydney. So I think they have to win this game. They'll know it. And I think they do win the game. They're one of the better defensive teams in the comp, which probably, which might surprise given what we've seen this year. The numbers and the and in terms of the champion data premiership standards and where they rank league-wide, they are one of the best three or four defences in the comp. And that, and Adelaide's scoring, that's been their issue this year. They've struggled to score, unlike what they were able to do 12 months ago. So I think the fact that Brisbane's so strong defensively, Adelaide struggling to score, I think that's a huge advantage for the Lions. And then you look at the midfield, and I still give the Lions midfield the edge. So, yeah, I think I get it. I kind of get why the Crows are favoured. They're going pretty well. They're at home. Brisbane obviously hasn't been going well, and they've got a stack of injuries. But, yeah, I think there's too much on the line this week for Brisbane, and I think they get up.
Well, I've tipped the Crows. I reckon Adelaide's still a sneaky finals chance, which we spoke about on Tuesday as well. I reckon keep an eye on them. Heaps of great clashes this weekend, as we said off the top. One of those is Essendon against GWS. That's a really interesting game. Now, you don't believe in the Bombers, Jake, so I've put this one in here specifically for you. I'm not sure a lot of people believe in them, to be fair. but will you finally take the Bombers seriously if they beat the Giants this week?
No, I won't. I don't think it's going to change much. Like I said, when we spoke about Carlton and Melbourne, obviously it depends on what happens, but there's not much. It's going to take something pretty extraordinary for me to think, gee, maybe this side can win a premiership this year. I'm not convinced. I don't think many people are convinced. I don't think Essendon supporters are convinced.
I don't think they're going to win a premiership. But in terms of finals.
But then you say take them seriously. Well, what does that mean?
Playing finals. Maybe winning a final for the first time.
Winning a final? I don't think they're even capable of that. I just think to win a premiership, to be in that hunt, you've got to be great at least one thing. Great. Really, really good. Yeah. One of the best in the league at something. They're not great at anything. You look at their midfield. They got a great midfield. It's pretty good. It's not great. Have they got a great defense? No. Have they got a great forward line? No.
Yeah.
And then you look at their percentage, 95 or 96, and you think that sums up where they are. They're an average team.
Yeah.
Record flatters them at the moment. I'm not going to be stunned. I'm not going to turn around and say, oh my God, what a massive boil over if the Bombers win this week. I think they're getting the Giants at a pretty good time. They've got a few injuries themselves. We don't know if Tom Green's going to play. Cornelio, they've got a few injuries, and all of a sudden, just a few things probably not working as they were early in the year. And Essendon obviously full of confidence. So I think they get them at a nice time. I'm not going to be so stunned if they win, but I don't think it's going to change my perception about whether they can forget winning a premiership. But even as you say, winning a final, I don't see a way they win a final.
Yeah, they were my team to watch this year, as I've already spoken about at length this season. I think their best can play finals. I think their worst is pretty poor, but you're right, their percentage is probably the best indicator as to how they're performing currently. But when you do look at those premiership standards that we've spoken about with champion data quite a few times, we'll look at a couple of those. They're 17th for points against from turnovers. Now, what the premiership standards means is you have to be top six in a lot of these key areas to win a premiership. That's where the last 10 premiers have all ranked. So they're 17th for points against from turnovers. The only team worse than them is North Melbourne.
Yeah.
That's only one key area, but 16th for transition, 15th for opposition score per inside 50. There's a lot they're not doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you look at all the teams inside the top eight at the moment, and all of the others are ticking far more boxes than the Bombers are. So look, it's not to knock Essendon, and they've played well. They've been better so far than I thought they would be this year. I was a bit sceptical of some of the players that were coming in and whether they could improve. And going back to last year, I thought the end of last year was absolutely diabolical. So I'll give them credit. I'll give credit to Brad Scott for turning things around. It's going to take something extraordinary, and not just this week. It's going to have to be an extended 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks to show me that they can be a force. Forget, I'm not even looking at winning a premiership. I'm talking about, as you said, can they win a final?
I do tend to defend them. I'm not tipping them this week, but I expect them to put up some sort of a fight.
Speaking of Essendon, Sam Draper. So we actually didn't get to talk about this last week because I think this broke a couple of hours after we went to air on Red Time.
Yes.
So do we want to see more or less players like Sam Draper speaking openly on podcasts or talking to the media?
Well, I think we clearly want to see more of it. Clearly, there's a line that you don't cross, and although his comments were in jest, and it probably does require a little bit of context, you can see why. And the Essendon Football Club and the Bulldogs have a right to be upset by what he did say. I think as long as that line isn't crossed, we do want, and we have wanted for so long, for players to express themselves and speak freely when they're talking to the media or they're on podcast or on radio, wherever it is, because that's something that I think footy media has lacked for a really long time. That's why we do want to see more of it. I mean, I can guarantee you now, the next time that he speaks anywhere, no matter where that is, he will be a robot.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not going to give anyone anything. So, yeah, to answer your question, I want to see more of it. I think,
and I think it scares everyone else.
Yeah.
It's not just him. I think it scares.
Clearly, what he said isn't clever. It's not smart. It's not acceptable. But I think the more personalities we see in the game, the better the game is. So yeah, we obviously want players to speak freely and openly.
Yeah.
But it might be pretty tough for them to sort of toe that fine line of what's acceptable and what isn't. Clearly, he crossed it. But yeah, I'm okay with players being a bit more open with that sort of stuff in the future.
Yeah, I don't have too much more to add to that. I agree with pretty much everything. We want to see it. You like seeing the personality. You like seeing...
it makes footy more fun.
It does. And I think it's good to see the person outside of the player, because we just see the player so often. We don't really get to see their personality and what they're like. The issue is that there are certain players that do show a little bit more and they get knocked back down for it. So it does, and then you see something like this.
This is one example
But it's going to scare others off. Yeah. Others are going to think, well, why would I do that if I'm just going to get criticised or get in trouble? So I think, it is a tough line it's a balancing act, but I don't see a way in which... I don't see a way in which it's going to happen in the future, where in terms of we're going to get more of this, because we just keep shooting them down when we do it, when we get it.
Moving on, we've spoken about the top end of the ladder and the teams that are performing quite well. Two teams that aren't, and they're on the foot end of the ladder, is Richmond and North Melbourne. They've only got one win between them this year. We've thought about both of these clubs, Jake, and we wondered which coaching job would you rather have right now if you had to take over one of these teams. Would you prefer to be coaching North Melbourne or Richmond?
Can I get a do-over? Can I pick another team?
I'm only giving you two options, mate.
It's a tough one.
You can't have a cop-out.
It is very tough. Look, I was big on Richmond falling off. I'm not saying I was the only one, but I thought Richmond was going to be falling off a cliff this year. I'm not surprised where they are.
They've had their fair share of injuries, which I think that's killed their season.
Yeah, look, but they're not the only team. I think there's a number of sides that have had a lot of injuries this year. At the end of the day, even if every club's at full strength, I still think they're going to be thereabouts in the bottom four. They might be a couple of spots higher, but I don't think they're going to be anywhere near finals, and that was what I was sort of saying at the start of the year. I think list-wise, they're going to be in a far worse position than North Melbourne in, say, 3 years' time. So... Just think about it. So in 3 years, Martin, Grimes, Pickett, Prestia, Lynch, Broad, McIntosh, they're all going to be gone. There's no way any of them are going to be playing. Vlosten will be 33, Nankervis 32, Short 31, Rioli and Hopper 30. And then who knows what's going to happen with Shea Bolton, Liam Baker, who is starting to just... There's a bit of circulation about trade rumours and where they could go.
Could be a good trade value, though.
They could be great trade value. But you don't know what will happen, and who knows with what they're going to get for them. But all of a sudden, all that experience is gone.
Mm.
How many youngsters that have come through for Richmond? I'm not talking about players they've brought in from other clubs like Taranto and Hopper and these guys who aren't really going to be that young. The young guys that they've drafted, the talent, how much of it is there that you actually are excited about? I don't think there's much. Mm. And then you compare that to North Melbourne. And I know it might sound crazy to say North is going to be better. The North will at some point be vying for a finals place and trying to win a final and then eventually going for a premiership. It sounds crazy now, but it is going to happen. They've bottomed out. They have banked the talent, or are banking the talent, and they will rise.
Yep.
And I'm not saying they will rise this year or next year, but it will happen. And in 3 years' time, they will be in a better position. 12 players they've taken in the top 26 of the draft since 2020.
Yeah,
that's easily more than anybody else. I mean, you can't just...
Their under-21s are a lot more talented than Richmond's under-21s.
Oh, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of which club would you want to coach, I don't know. Richmond is a far bigger club.
Mm.
You know, they've had the success. I mean, it's hard to follow. It's
funny. MCG, big crowds, bigger games to be involved in. But if you're talking about the specific list, how good you're going to be on the field and potentially winning premierships,
there's no doubt.
The answers are a little bit different.
There's no doubt. In my mind, North Melbourne in 3 years' time is going to, assuming that you walked in at the start of next year and you're given at least 3 years, by that stage, it's going to be... it's not going to be close in terms of the quality of the list.
There's a lot of first-round draft talent there, as you said. I think the trajectories of both teams are completely different at the moment. And we spoke about it last week. The Tigers are in a pretty weird position with Tassie coming into the competition as well. They're going to have a lot of draft concessions. If the Tigers do bottom out at the wrong time, which we expect them to, they risk staying bad and at the bottom of the ladder for quite a long time, which is what hurt Melbourne and the Suns.
100%.
The Giants came into
and
the competition.
And there's not much you can do about that. That's just
the only
wrong
thing you
place,
can do,
right time.
The only thing you can do is stay ahead of the eight ball and get rid of some of these players that are coming off contract in the next few years if their value is still there. So I think you're right. Yeah, I think North are in a far better position, especially with all
that
young talent.
But no one's getting that North job. I mean, they'll keep Clarko there for 15
years if
they have to.
Well, they're not going to hire me or you, and that's what the question was about, wasn't it? Can they beat the Suns this week?
I don't think so. The Suns are pretty good up in Darwin. I think they've won.
Well, they haven't
four
won
straight.
Outside of Queensland this year, the Suns. So this would be their first win away from
well,
home, technically.
I believe they're 4-0 in the last 2 years up there. So they've got the Suns this week, and then Geelong, I think, the following week. So that's a far tougher game. North and then Geelong. I think they win. I mean, you'd be pretty surprised. But we did say, I think last week on Red Time, that we looked at North Melbourne's five or six games to come, and you thought, can they get one of those? Maybe
this
they
is
can.
A banana peel game for the Suns, maybe. That's all we've got time for. Thanks, Jake, for your time again. And thanks to everyone at home or at work or on the way to the footy, wherever you're listening. Thank you. Enjoy the footy. And we'll speak to you all next week.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.